You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome to episode 58 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
The dream of unlimited progress is in reality a nightmare of savagery and death. Elena Ferrante.
We are back. I'm Greg Rosenthal, the best friend of Anthony Jeselnik, world famous comedian, and we're here to enjoy each other's company with our producer Erica Tamposi before we take a 1 week break. Little program note: we will be dark next week while I'm at the Super Bowl with Erica. But you know that just means today can be extra special.
Yeah.
Stop looking at me so annoyed.
I'm not annoyed. I'm smiling at you, waiting to say this. Sometimes Greg and Erica like to get away. And the Super Bowl was in Miami this year, and they just thought, hey, let's just take some time for ourselves. And I said, fine, you know what? Doing a podcast together is a hard job, and sometimes they need some time off. I could have been here still working. I don't need time off, but they do, more often than not, to be honest. But it's sweet that you guys get to get away.
I mean, we're working. We're working. We're doing podcasts.
Oh, yeah,
the Around the NFL podcast. We're doing all sorts of stuff. Big news, you know, you quoting Ferrante, you finished the Neapolitan series,
yeah.
Which was a present from Emeka, my wife, a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I took my sweet time with it.
I mean, where does it rank on your list of favorite books?
Like
or
the
series? I don't know.
I mean, as a series, I don't think I've read another series. You know what I mean? I wasn't like a Lord of the Rings guy, but I thought it was fantastic.
The Patrick Melrose novels.
I quoted.
There's been a lot of good series lately.
I'd say I liked it more than the Patrick Melrose novels. I mean, it's apples and oranges, to be honest, but I love them both. It's rare for me to read a 4-book series about female friendship. But everything I heard about these novels was great. I mean, for me to write down a quote, like I emailed that quote to myself as I finished it Saturday night. Saturday night, literally, I had dinner with a friend. Literally. I don't know why I said that. I had dinner with a friend, 7 to 9, got home, and I'm like, I'm going to finish this book. I've got like 200 pages left. I start reading. I finish the book, and I'm like, that was amazing. I want to write now. And I start writing, and then I look up, and it's fucking daylight.
Whoa.
I literally stayed up all night, and I'm like, God, I should go to bed soon. Let me just finish writing. Let me finish what I'm doing. And then I'm like checking my email real fast, and I see that the Penguins start playing at 9 a.m. The Penguins had a game at 9 a.m. Versus the Bruins on national television. So I'm like, fuck it, I don't even feel tired. So I stayed up, watched the game, and then by the time that was over, football started. So I stayed awake through that, and then went and got a massage at 4 that I'd previously scheduled, and I was like out of my mind going to this massage.
Delirious.
Like, I was like, I don't... Like, I would try to read something, and it would be all fuzzy. Like, I was like, I'm sleep-deprived. I've been up over 36 hours for no reason. And then had the massage, came home, and passed out cold for, like, 14 hours.
Mm,
and
great.
Woke up Monday and felt great.
It's also an advertisement for Ferrante. She was so inspiring. She kept you up.
I also had a cold brew about 1 p.m., and I think that fucked
me
up,
that
too.
Probably was a factor. I am fascinated. You mentioned to me that your process lately, you've been writing jokes and building up your next hour of comedy is partly you just read books, you know, literature, and then after reading for a little while, then you write some jokes.
Mm-hmm.
What inspires you about that?
Honestly, it has nothing to do with what the book is about, if it's good or bad. It's like just putting words in your head, and then I can write. And sometimes it's about what I read. Sometimes it's nothing having to do with the book, but it just gets me going where I run out of jokes to write. And I just, instead of being having writer's block, I just read something. And by like, it takes me a day or two to read a book, and then I write as much as I can. And then when I run out,
are you writing strictly jokes, or are you just like, I'm just going to write a little story because I want to write just to like be writing?
I'm cranking jokes, and then I'm hoping that at some point I find like a through line, or I'm like, oh, I can make a story out of this. Like, I'd love to have a story or a bigger piece for the hour. I definitely need that. I'm just hoping it comes to me at some point. But right now, it's just jokes, and I'll write maybe 10, and maybe out of those 10, maybe one
like punchlines, like just set up and punches, or
mm-hmm.
That, yeah.
If you've ever seen anything I've ever done, it's just
well,
like
no,
that.
you have more, like you just said, storylines and stuff like that. I know when you were writing for like Fallon and stuff, you would write like just punchline jokes quick, right? But that's different than what you're doing. We get a lot of emails about this.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of people
Fallon,
are interested.
They would give us like headlines, and I would just take the headline, not change a word, and then write a punchline. Like I never was like, oh, I got to read the story and find out what to write, which I have to do here now. And I'm just like, what have I not talked about? What works, what doesn't? And it's still like a lot of like my family, a lot of babies getting hurt still, a lot of kid stuff. And I'm hoping just that it evolves in some way. Like next
Maybe
week
toddlers.
While you guys are gone, I've got some toddlers in there. Don't you worry. But I'm having dinner with my manager, Christy, to like talk about like, I'm like, this, you're the only person I can talk to about stand up that isn't afraid of me. That
Christy.
Let's talk. Yeah, that let's talk about how I can maybe evolve. But it's fun. I really enjoy writing.
Well, I think the whole like reading as inspiration or just something to do is one of those pieces of advice that no one ever really listens to, except people that actually write or you know are looking like do that as a habit. Reading is what every writer says is the best thing to do to inspire you. And it's not like a one-to-one connection, but I totally understand that because when I read, I mean, that's the one thing in my life that I found that afterwards, A, you're mentally engaged and like your mind is like jogged, but you also feel calmer. Like it's the, I don't know. It makes total sense to me. Like it is rare that I feel better mentally or maybe more like open and ready to like, think a new, you know, something creative or a different thought than after reading for a couple hours. I mean, it's the same idea of meditating too, but it's doing it in a more engaged way.
I mean, it's like Professor Cooley in at Tulane, the creative writing professor that I took twice and Greg dropped out of once and never took again. But he would always say writers have to be readers.
Right.
And I just took and I was a reader anyway, but there are no comedians who read, like
right.
None.
Right.
That I'm always shocked by that, that how do you write if you don't read anything? And people are like, oh, you're so pretentious. And I'm like, if I said I watch TV all the time, that wouldn't be pretentious.
Right.
But I read instead of watching TV. Like, I don't like TV.
Right. It's been a fairly established and successful form of entertainment for a couple hundred years. It's not, I guess, a couple thousand. You know, it's not too out of the realm. But you're right. It is annoying that people think you're pretentious for reading.
I don't care. Let me be pretentious. Like, I like to read. I always have. And people are missing out. And I'm smarter than all of them. If being smarter than everyone is pretentious, then I guess I'm pretentious. If being better than 99% of the population just because I read a lot of books and I talk about it all the time is pretentious, then you know what? Then I'm pretentious. And I, you know, that's my argument.
I try not to talk about it too much because people just find it more annoying than I already am.
I pimp reading. You know what I mean? As if someone looks up to me and they're like, how do I get to be like you? I'd be like, read as much as you can.
Right. I should. Honestly, like I always was a big reader, but somewhere around age 31 or two, I sort of turned into like a religion for me where I just made sure I was doing it all the time as much as I can. And it's like one of the most important things that's ever happened to me.
I'm reading right now. Didn't hear a word Greg said. I'm so into this new book. I watched the Penguin game, and I want to call out Pittsburgh for a second. It was a great game. Penguins were down 3-0, came back and won 4-3 at home. Murray was in goal. This is a guy who's won two Stanley Cups. This is a guy who's won two Stanley Cups. He's our goalie, and he's been playing that well this year. He's at home. They put him in, and we got Bronx cheers. You know what that means?
Sure.
Like when like they sarcastically clap when he like got his first save, did it 4 times during the game, and I was ashamed. The announcers are talking about it. I read different sports writers who were like, I can't believe they're Bronx cheering this guy. He was like almost in tears after the game, and I was pretty upset. I was mad at Pittsburgh. You got to do better.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Didn't
I don't
see
like
this
Pittsburgh.
Coming.
I don't like two things about Pittsburgh. I don't like that they would give Bronx cheers to Matt Murray, who won us 2 cups very recently. And I don't like that they all hate Mike Tomlin. Everyone in Pittsburgh I've ever talked about Mike Tomlin is racist.
I was literally just going
to
imitate
racist.
You going, racist, 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 racist.
Yes, that is a perfect imitation of me. Everyone's like, well, he won with Cowers players. I'm like, you guys are so racist. He's been there for like 13 years. How long has he been there?
Although,
never had a losing season.
Right.
worked miracles this year.
It's cool. He's the only. He's just about the only cool NFL coach there is. But they, you know, booing the goalie or Bronx cheering the goalie and getting sick of Tomlin is a very sports fan thing to do, which I never understand. It's like the Patriots fans who booed the Patriots this year. Like,
I get that.
Many times.
I get that 100%.
It's like coming off. It's like, what more does this team, or in Tom Brady's case, Tom Brady, need to do to just be absolved from booing? Just shut up. You just got to witness the greatest 20-year achievement of any professional sports team ever. Just shut up. Getting, shut up for the rest of your
getting
life.
Getting away with more cheating than other teams?
Right, that too. It's fine. They won.
No, if I was in Boston, I'd boo the hell out of them. I'd boo every time. I'd boo Giselle. Boo Giselle.
I mean, if cheating, you know, with the whole World Series thing, wouldn't you have rather cheated and won? Or at least been a fan of a team that cheated and won.
I wouldn't care at all. It's like winning a Super Bowl on like a controversial call. It's like
you're
you
not
still
on
get
the
trophy.
I'm not really on the team. You can't take away my experience from when they won.
Well, when they're like,
that's when it was good.
They should vacate the title and give it to the Dodgers. Like they didn't get to didn't get to jump around and huddle in the middle of the field. Like you didn't get. It doesn't matter.
The players get all worked up or whatever, one way or another, but I don't understand the fans who get all worked up about it, like after the fact, that like it somehow is tainting their lives. No, you got that fun.
What do you think about the Saints being upset about last year's pass interference non-call?
We're really going deep into sports today. I like it. I mean, that was, they should have, you know, they need to get over it a little quicker, but that was understandable.
I thought it was funny, the first game of this season, Saints fans showed up. There were like four of them dressed like referees. And someone was like, why would they do, like, why, what are they trying to say? Like, it didn't make any sense. They were like, we hate the refs, let's dress up as them and then get wasted.
They would have lost to the Patriots probably anyways. But that one was understandable, but they really milked it for all its worth.
Now, you had said, you'd never do this, but you said when you came in here you had a lot to talk about this week.
Oh, yeah, I have a few different things. One was I wanted to tell you when you just – to know that what you're saying on the Jessel, Nick, and Rosenthal Vanity Project,
JRVP,
Junior Vice President,
has consequences. And last week, you made fun of a video that my other podcast and television show,
the NFL show,
made, saying it was, you know, a bad video, essentially. That's the short.
Aggressively
bad. I was surprised. I didn't remember you saying that on the show either.
I don't either.
But a very hurt fan of our podcast, who's a huge fan of yours, who was the producer that made that entire video, said that he heard it, you know, and he was actually excited because he's a fan of yours, and he was like pretty excited that Anthony Jeselnik made fun of his video. He was so excited he called his dad and told him, who's also a Jeselnik fan.
I mean, you guys were like pretending to play musical instruments, and there was like kind of like a wavy gravy sort of like filter on the thing. I felt bad for you,
yeah,
and one of the other guys on your podcast.
Shout out to Drake. You know, shout out to Drake and his dad. Well, I wanted to bring back, I wouldn't call it a segment, but just more of a question of, like, what would you do as a parent? I had a couple different incidents in the last week with my son, Walker, and I was just curious, like, if you were Walker's parents, what would you do?
And I am his godfather, so I could, like, if you guys died, then I take over.
Now, he sometimes makes up little funny songs, not unlike his godfather.
Mm-hmm.
You love to do that. And I wish I could remember the melody of this song. I can't. I wrote down the words, and then the next day I could not remember how kind of he sang it.
I don't believe you. I think you're just saving it for the next Around the NFL video. You don't burn it on here.
But one morning at breakfast, he had some little song going that the lyrics were something like, you can walk, you can run, guns can kill you. And then those were the three lines over and over. It's like, you can walk, you can run, guns can kill you.
These are all true things. I mean, he sounds like a prophet. I think that's great.
All I could think, like, me and Emeka just started laughing, and all I could think was, like, this is something like a little Anthony child would be singing.
Yeah, maybe you heard it from me. I would have recorded it. I would have recorded it for sure and kept it around. Maybe like And I would like work with him. You know what I mean? Don't let him just sing that part and just forget about it. Make him sit down.
Because I didn't want to dive deep. I didn't know if it was sort of that was all connected. That like doesn't matter if you walk or run. Like I'm coming after you with the gun. Or it was just three unrelated thoughts. I didn't even know he knows what guns really are. It's never come up.
So there's no way that was something they taught them in school to be like, if there's a shooter, you know, here's the song.
That's so sad.
I hope not. He's in preschool.
Because if I was going to teach kids about school shootings, that's what I would do exactly, is teach them a song and stick it in their head. Get that little earworm. You can walk, you can run, guns will kill you. That's a great song.
I know.
That's a banger.
That's kind of what I thought. I was like, that's an Anthony Jeselnik single from 15 years ago. another I would say troubling, and we basically just ignored it. I think I asked. I might have asked something about how he knew about guns or what he knew about guns, because he doesn't really know what that means. But there's a lot of death talk right now between him and his sister of just like, you know, you can die if this happens or not.
That's natural.
We were walking to school, you know, talking about the upcoming holiday last week, which was Martin Luther King holiday, which is yesterday as we're taping, and I asked him what they learned about Martin Luther King in class, and he didn't really know. And then he was like, well, you know, I learned that the dark people weren't very nice to the light people. I thought that's
wait, did you say dark and light or dark and white?
That's what he said, dark and light.
Light.
Yeah, he said that was his takeaway, and I didn't know where to go with that. I said, no, that's not it.
Maybe he thought the dark people, maybe that's darkness versus light, you know what I mean? And light, and that can be any color. That he thought that the racist people.
I think he just had it flipped. He had it flipped in a very like Trumpian, like white man victimization or something, like 2020 mode. Yeah. I don't know.
I would have sat him down and been like, stop saying that. You know, until you until you get all the facts.
Yeah, what did you say?
I did say no. That's not true. You know, he was a man who fought for, you know, all races to be equal, but especially, you know, as he was a black man, and they had been, you know, mistreated, and they have been mistreated in this country for a long time, and you know, and it, but I felt like, you know, that kind of went over his head.
I think you teach kids about racism by example. I don't think you sit and like explain to them what it is, because they don't understand that. But if they see you, like if they see that you're racist, they'll pick that up. You know what I mean? All the people that I know who are racist had racist parents, and sometimes you can be like me. And have racist parents, but not turn out like that. But I think a lot of kids learn by example. You know, they think about their dad. It makes me think of one of our friends from college who, the first weekend freshman year, almost got in a fight outside a bar because some guy used a racial slur, and he like was like, "You can't say that!" And like almost got in a fight. And by the end of college, he was probably the most racist of all our friends.
Who is this?
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I mean, the most racist of all our friends, I feel like that's casting a wide net.
In college? Yeah.
Jesus.
I'm joking. It's a joke. Although there was a lot of Southern kids there. I don't necessarily know the answer, but I do think that he was maybe a man that was like yelling once late at night just to cars going by. Was that that man?
I don't know who you're talking about now. Now we're all confused. I don't want to give any details because it would be too obvious. And we have all our friends who listen to the show. That's as close as they can get to me. I'm too big. I read too many books. You don't even have my phone number anymore. I changed it. Was that it? That's all you got?
That's basically it, yeah.
Then I will take a moment. I wasn't going to do this, but I will say my mom listens to the show. My family listens to the show. Rest in peace, Alexei. My family had to put down their cat. We've had for 19 years. And it was like the first, like people were like, oh, my cat's like a dog. And this was like the ultimate. It was this giant ass cat they had forever. It was great. And Greg was laughing at me earlier because like yesterday my mom called me and was like on the verge of tears talking about Alexei. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, but it's like 19 years is a long time. Alexei had a great life. And then my brother texted me today and was like, have you been getting like texts from all the family like talking about the cat today? And I was like, not a single person has texted me. And he would send me screenshots of like these long texts from my dad being like, it's been a rough day for the family. But, you know, and it was like, it sounded like something that he would talk to everyone about. And no one bothered with me because they know I don't have a heart.
I love that you left off your family group text when animals.
It wasn't a group text. It was just my dad like reaching out. But I think my sisters were very upset and everyone. But I'm like, I love the cat. It was a cat. 19 years is a long time. It's like people are crying about like their grandfather died. Like how old was he? Like 98. Like, well, he had a long, great life. You can't be too upset. If you get taken,
well, yes, you can. If you get taken, you still have that relationship. Yeah,
but if
I
you
know
get taken
saying.
Before your time, it's like a tragedy. Right. If you have a long, nice life, it's like let's remember the good things. And Alexei could drive a car.
People love to keep their cats alive forever, though. We had a cat, Morris. My mom had that, made it to about 23, mm-hmm. and was wow. just kind of skeleton and hairballs at the end. And, you know, are they really having that much fun, the cats, at that point? I don't know. I don't know what was in the water at my house, though. We had like a 23 and a 19-year-old once at the same time. It was just like Night of the Living Cats. It was kind of scary.
Sounds awful. But I'm excited. My parents said they'll never get another cat, which is good news. Because the cat, the hair, and like the litter box, they don't want to deal with that. They have a dog, and I can't wait till that thing dies. I hate the dog.
Whoa.
And when that dies, they're going to get another dog, which I'm psyched about. Because I love dogs, but I'm not a cat guy.
Why don't they just get another dog now? Why do you hate this dog so much?
Because it was the yappiest. Like, if you left the house, it barked. If you came in the house, it barked. It just sucked. Hmm. It sucked. And we only had it because my sister tricked my parents into getting it for her. And then the first night was like it peed in her house, and she like took it to my parents and dropped it off. And they had this goddamn Pomeranian.
You got
to
return that dog. I feel like people.
My parents love animals too much. Like if you just dropped off anything, if you put like threw a rat in the house, my parents would find a way to love it.
I believe that.
Yeah. My parents love every living being except me from the years 18 through 27.
But now who are they proud of the most?
Me.
Well, yeah.
It's me. I read about it. And now it's time for Did We Get Any Notes? It's funky in the city.
Yeah, it's funky in the city. Finally.
Walker could take some notes from that one. That was great. We have some notes this week. I want to get into this first. Jonas Larson is dead. Jonas Larson, head of development at Comedy Central, the guy who brought me back to Comedy Central, as well as Kent Alterman, who was also dead, has been fired by the network.
Dead.
No, he's not dead. But when people leave the network, they're dead. You know, they're no longer with us in the building. No, I like him more now that he's gone because it's not like he doesn't have any control over me. But he wrote me a nice email telling me he'd been let go. But I think it's not good for the podcast. It's not good for the TV show. Good Talk season 2, we start working on that in a couple of weeks, and we are 12 episodes away from the end of season 2 of the Justin Lick and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP, Junior Vice President.
And Jonas was the guy who kind of gave me a second season of both of those things, and there might not be a third season of this podcast. I said we would go to 100 episodes. That might not happen without Jonas there, so it's something that the viewers should be aware of. Jonas, I've known as long as I've been at Comedy Central. He was there when I first started. My favorite memory of him is right before, like a week before the Trump roast. He was like in charge of the roasts and comedy specials. That was his like thing when I worked here at first. And he was like, Anthony, how's it going? How's like the roast coming? And I grabbed him by both shoulders. And I was so intense about preparing for the roast that I like grabbed him and just went, I'm going to kill. And the fear in his face. Like I wasn't trying to be funny. I was trying to like let him know like he didn't make a mistake by booking me. And the fear in his eyes, he like backed away, like legitimately afraid that I was like, okay, I'm in good shape here. I'm bringing the right level of intensity to this. Did he once meet me backstage after I got a standing ovation on my second taping of Caligula in Chicago and tell me I had to go back out and take audience questions because I'd only done 58 minutes instead of 60? Yes. But I was able to just stare him down and tell him absolutely not until they turned the lights back on. But sorry, Jonas, you're gone. And again, this is like a thing going on at Comedy Central right now. We had the merger, and people that I've known as long as I've been here have been getting the axe.
So basically,
the two
key executives in your coming back to Comedy Central mm-hmm. are gone.
Are gone. Yeah.
But you know what? Our listeners are legion, and they've been growing. Season 2, and they will let Comedy Central know how much how valuable we are to them.
Yeah, that helps. If you guys are if you really want a third season of this podcast, the comments do help. The ratings do help. Tell your friends about the podcast because it's 50-50. It's a coin flip, and I don't know what's going to happen. I hear from the people who get fired, but not the people who replace them, which is weird. it's a strange time for everyone, so we'll see if I'm here in 6 months from now after I finish Good Talk season 2 and JRVP season 2. And in addition to that, we did get notes today per Jordy. First, he said Anthony's great reviewing shows. Thanks, Jordy. He said liked his take on the Kevin Hart doc series. Documentary, he means there. Appreciate the football talk, especially in regards to Antonio Brown. I like appreciate the football talk. We threw him a bone, or as if like we could talk about football every week if we wanted to.
Well, his note previously, for longtime listeners will know, was more football stories.
Yeah, and we made fun of him mercilessly for that. And then right before I came here, I got another email. I'm going to quote this word for word. Feels like Antonio Brown can have his own weekly segment. Just an additional thought. Yeah, we know what it just is, Jordy. And he's referring today, of course, Antonio Brown had cops at his house, might be charged with burglary and assault. But why would you pitch a segment about a wide receiver who's not even in the league 2 weeks before the end of the season forever? It's that can't be a weekly segment. And if it was going to be, it would have been week one and not week 28. I'm going to go ahead. No,
well, plus
18.
Antonio Brown's kind of past the funny part of his story and is just sad. And
Erica texted me the news today and I was like, I don't even want to know. I don't want to click on the tweet about cops being outside his house. I assume he's dead. Did we get any notes? Thanks, Jordy. Rest in peace, Jonas. You and Alexei. Have a good time. And now it's time for
Ad Copy.
Our old friends at Hims. They're back. We've done such a good job. You've heard us talking about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best. And you've responded, so we're back talking about it. If you haven't yet, there's still time to see what they are all about. 66% of men start to lose their hair by the age of 35. I think we're both outside of that.
I'm getting a little thinner though. I've gotten thinner in the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, mine I would say is starting to slowly creep back maybe at the temples. But we're 40. At 35 we were good.
I'm 41. You're going to be 41shortly.
It's not thin though.
I'm going to get some Hims. I don't have that like back thing, and you can just wear a yarmulke.
Yeah, I will do that for the first time in my life. Once you've noticed thinning hair, though, it can already be too late. For Hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Hims is helping guys be the best versions of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Hims was created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person, and it's completely confidential and discreet. Answer a few questions. A doctor will review. If they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe a medication to treat your hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Anthony's laughing, and I don't know why.
This Thanksgiving, when your relatives say healthy and full, well, they'll finally be talking about your hair and not the turkey. This coming Thanksgiving, okay. I'm saying in 10 months from
now. I was mentally editing that part out. Because I'm a pro.
I saw it and I was like, I can't wait to read this. Order now. JRVP listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. And subject to doctor's approval, I should note that. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds, thousands even. People would pay any amount of money, but it's only $5. If you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else, you'd be wasting your time. You'd be throwing your money away. Throwing it away. You can just sit at home and do this. Go to hims.com/vanity, V-A-N-I-T-Y. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S, for hims.com/vanity. For hims.com/vanity. Don't let Thanksgiving pass you by. Hims.
Anthony bringing that pre-roast energy. I feel like he just grabbed me by the shoulders and screamed in my face.
I'm going to kill. And that was
Ad Copy.
And now it's time to take it down to a little place we like to call Erica's Corner.
Moving on to some.
Erica Tamposi is the Antonio Brown of the JRVP podcast. She's not always here, but when she is, she's probably about 10, 15 minutes late. That's what people know Antonio Brown for sure. We like to let her carve out a little time and show off her skills, you know, show her charisma and what makes people love her in the comments, and give her own little own little space to do whatever she wants and just fly around like a kite who someone's let go.
Wow.
Erica, what do you got?
Well, before I read our email, because we have a good question this week, I wanted to read an iTunes review because we asked and you guys answered. There was a ton of good, really cool comments and a lot of love and a lot of not so much love. So we had a couple of bad ones in there, but 95% of good ones.
What do you mean? When you say bad, do you mean like...
I feel like they're people hoping you'll read them and they're like trying to be funny.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So they're like, it's the fans.
They'll
it's
be
not
like,
someone.
Oh, Anthony's funny and Greg and Erica should jump off a bridge. Like, just stuff
you can,
like that.
As long as you give the 5 stars, it doesn't matter what you write. If you're joking with the 1 stars,
it's
go
not
kill
a joke.
Yourself.
Yeah. I mean, your mom's already upset right now because you said that. I don't know how Greg thinks that's like the go-to insult.
No, I want that bleeped.
Nope.
People won't know.
Nope.
It's happening.
You do it all the time. He does it every day. Every single day.
I don't think I've said that since the last time I said it on this podcast.
And you said it 100 times in that last one. You said it so many times. Yeah, if you leave 5 stars, I don't care what you say. But if you say something really entertaining, every week from now on, we're going to do a comment of the week. And again, like I said, we're on thin ice here at Comedy Central. We need those comments. We need to beat your two dads.
It's a blood war.
Okay, so this one is the title's called Men Who Support Women, 4 stars. They only gave us 4 stars, not 5. They always have something from a woman to support and recommend. They are 2 well-read, woke males that also talk about dude stuff. Worth it.
What's the date on that comment? Was that one they left last week, or did
no,
you pick
like
one from way back?
24 hours ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I feel like I saw that a long time ago. But I always like hearing that. I like people telling me that I'm woke. You know what woke means?
Yeah, but why 4
educated.
Stars? Fuck you.
Educated. I bet they messed up and they meant to hit 5 and they hit 4. Or maybe they're like one of those like Rain Man type guys who like needs it to be even. I'll take either one. You can't leave a 0.5-star on an iTunes comment. So I'll take it. It's 3, get out of my face. 2, you're kidding yourself. 1, we got a problem. But I don't mind 4. And that's a good comment.
I feel like
we're
I saw
woke.
That one months ago, too.
Yeah, me too. I think Erica's lying to us and picked one from a long time ago.
I literally was just scrolling
this
and
new,
I found
this
it.
This new segment is starting to struggle already.
That's an old one. You got to pick one from the week that people, like, we told
we
people last week
you,
to send
hey,
them.
Hey, let's pick a new one.
Yeah.
And then here's one we recognize.
Well, and Erica did it 5 minutes while she was in the car.
No, I was even taking screenshots and sending them.
This is right now what you're saying is people complaining about. In 24 hours. Go ahead and read the email.
Honestly? Dominic Z asks, I moved to New Orleans in June, so I've been here for about 5 years now. I'm looking forward to my first Mardi Gras as it's about to get started. Have a couple questions for Anthony and Greg. What are your tips and tricks for Mardi Gras? What are your best drunken stories from Mardi Gras?
I wonder how old, does he say, is there any indication how old this person is?
No.
Erica, did you say Mardi Gras?
I don't know what I said.
It was Mardi Gras. It's called Mardi Gras. That would be the first thing I would say.
I didn't say that.
Mardi Gras.
Yeah, the S is silent.
Yeah, it's Mardi Gras.
I definitely.
If you're over 25 years old, I would say don't go. I would say rent out wherever you're living to someone for a lot of money.
I think you just don't know what it's like to be adulting at Mardi Gras. It's a totally different experience, of which I don't really know what it's all about, but. Like the Pete Gardner, Kevin Shorp experience. Those are 2 of our friends who still live down there. It's like a totally different. You're like part of a crew. There's like adult parties, but you're not doing, you know, you're not doing the whole thing.
Yeah, stay off of Bourbon Street. Right. You know, there are fun parades well before that weekend. But yeah, get out of Bourbon Street if you can. We had 4 Mardi Gras in a row from 18 or like 19 to 22. And we went so hard. We went so hard those 4 years that I never wanted to go back for Mardi Gras. I never wanted to go back for Mardi Gras or really Jazz Fest. I like New Orleans when that stuff's not happening. I want to go to restaurants. I want to eat.
Me too, but I also wouldn't mind an alternate universe where like I do like a classy Mardi Gras as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Sounds realistic. About as realistic as you transporting into an alternate universe. Let's talk. I think what people really want to know is crazy Mardi Gras stories. Greg, you told me you were unsure, and I knew exactly what to talk about as soon as Erica told this question.
Well, let's hear it then.
My freshman year and sophomore year, I had sex with two different women in the same stairwell of a hospital parking garage. There was like, we had like a truck set
in
up with all
night?
These kegs. No, separate years. Like it was like one Mardi Gras, I slept with someone, and the next Mardi Gras, I slept with a different person in the same stairwell. And then the third year, my junior year, I had a girlfriend at the time. And I tried to like talk her into sleeping in the same stairwell. And she was like, what? What? And she was so mad at me that I would even try to. I thought if I could do it 4 years in a row, that they would build like a plaque to me in that stairwell. And that did not happen. She was not having anything to do with it, which I thought was funny. But that same year that she said absolutely not, I went to the truck early in the morning after staying up all night the night before, just drinking. We weren't like drug people in New Orleans. We were just drinkers. And then I was like, I've got to go to sleep right now. It's like 9 a.m. And I went up into that stairwell and then walked out, and there was a helicopter pad. And I just fell asleep with my like shirt, like a button-down shirt opened, fell asleep on my back on this helipad, and then woke up around 1-2 p.m. with the worst sunburn I've ever had in my life. I went down. There's like still pictures I have of me with like the reddest face and just a strip down like the center of my chest. And everyone thought I was like really funny. I was in like a great mood and just like having the time of my life. But my face was peeling like horrifically for the next like 2 or 3 months. If I get skin cancer one day, I will think back to my time sleeping on that helipad. I kept buying bottles of aloe lotion and smearing it on my face. And then I would leave the bottle somewhere and have to go find another bottle. And it was a terrible, terrible day for old Jez.
Why is it that was where we went, was that exact hospital parking lot and helipad? Because as you're telling that story, you're jogging a memory that I have of hooking up on that helipad, like as the sun was coming up, which is a very embarrassing thing for a 40-year-old married person to say out loud, like hooking up on a helipad.
Now you went to college in New Orleans and you're telling crazy stories.
No, but now I'm like remembering that. Well, but why weren't there a million places? But maybe not.
No, I'll tell you exactly why we went there. Because when people get arrested during Mardi Gras, 90% of the time it's for public urination. People are drinking so much, and it's hard to get a bathroom. But we had the truck was parked on the street along the parade route, which we had for those 3 years, and then we lost it senior year and never got to go back because we destroyed a car. And if you walk 2 blocks down the street, there was a hospital, which was attached to the parking garage, and you can go in there and use their bathroom. They wouldn't say no to you. And people would just go up in the parking garage and pee in there. But people would use that bathroom all the time. That's why we went there.
Right.
That's why that was popular.
I feel like
the helipad was a hospital's helipad.
I feel like we might have talked about destroying the car on the Rosenthal and Jeselnik vanity project.
RJVP.
But that was like, I do still have pictures from that, which is very memorable. We didn't, you know, Anthony and I didn't really, but more or less our group, our fraternity and other friends that were there, like we had parked basically our truck where we just drank, you know, all day, like kind of like as a home base nearby, and someone had left, you know, someone in New Orleans had left their car.
Someone abandoned the car.
Right.
They never came
right.
and got
Tickets
it.
Were yeah. all on it. And like as Mardi Gras went on, somehow people just decided to completely destroy the car, to tackle doors off of it. It escalated.
There's a picture of me sitting inside with like a big smile on my face with like all the windows smashed out. But I never touched the car. But after that year, they were like, guys, get out of here. You can never come back. Because of that car.
I just remember my friends from high school came sophomore year. I don't think that was the same year, but I can't remember. And this involves a couple tips, which is one, like pace yourself in Mardi Gras. I mean, it seems obvious, but everyone goes down there and goes balls to the wall the first night they're there, and it goes wrong. And it's like, no, the point is to be at a consistent like level of fun the whole time. Mm-hmm. I feel like my best times during Mardi Gras were either at like 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. It's like you got to get to the 3 a.m., but you also want to be at a good spot at 3 p.m. And I feel like out-of-towners always blow that and go too hard.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever
we'd guest, they'd always be like, what are you guys doing? Like, we're just going to stand and watch movies. They'd watch DVDs all day. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, this is Mardi Gras. Like, you want longevity. You want to make it at least until Tuesday morning. And you can take a nap and then get up and go. Like, it's a 24-hour thing. It's a great time.
And
but
I just remember my friend in that year, and a lot was going on that year. And I just – people were drunk driving too much and all this stuff. And I just remember my friends were just like, God, Greg doesn't fuck around anymore. Like, what the, like, what the fuck is happening down here? It's a totally lawless and beautiful existence. I don't know if I have a special memory, though.
No? Did you ever work during Mardi Gras?
I once, like, quit my job during Mardi Gras, which is, like, a bad way to be, which is kind of a party foul.
People
like,
make a lot of money
like,
during Mardi
Gras. Like, not showing up. Like, I think I showed up for one shift and then... And then did not.
Senior year, I remember they scheduled me like every day during Mardi Gras at the Favori. Was that the name of the restaurant we both worked at for a little bit?
Figaro.
And I just wrote on the thing. I was like, guys, I'm going out of town to look at law schools during the break. Can anyone cover my shifts? And someone just wrote, ha ha, you're fired. And I didn't even check with the manager. I just never came back. I never worked there again. But it was worth it. And, you know, I hope you enjoy all of your Mardi Gras as long as you stay in New Orleans. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on, you crazy diamond. Is that like an 80s playlist?
Yeah.
All right.
I like it this week. I don't like, though, that like we couldn't really find that many headlines. You know, we look every week, and Erica does a great job looking, and I look. But like we have like this certain... you know, kind of like level that we want to get to of like it has to be a certain story in terms of it's funny. It has to fit what we do. And this was like a week there really weren't any stories we wanted to talk about.
Psych! It's the motherfucking Pro Bowl!
It's the Pro Bowl!
Pro Bowl!
Oh, you thought the Super Bowl in 2 weeks was going to be the big event? No.
The
NFL is
all
about one game every year, and that game is in Orlando.
You play 17 weeks, and then you play another week, and then one more week, and then what do you got? You got the Pro Bowl. It's all building to this.
It's been some dark times in Orlando, what with the shooting. Now it's time to smile.
Now it's time to smile. Now it's time to smile and clap your hands as hard as you can. Clap your hands until you break your feet. It's the Pro Bowl.
It's John Harbaugh. It's Pete Carroll. It's possible. They wanted to lose in the divisional round just so that they could get a free trip down to Orlando and face off with the best players in the league at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you talk about Mardi Gras. Mardi's got nothing on this. You win a skills competition when people have footballs, you got it. All right? It's the best players in the league who weren't good enough to make it to the Super Bowl every single year. All the guys who aren't injured at this point in the season get to come down, the best of them, and do what they do best.
You want to see the best cornerback in the league? Probably not going to be there. But you want to see the seventh alternate, Xavier Rhodes, who is ranked 102nd out of 104 cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus this year? He got invited, and he'll be down there. It's the X-Man, Xavier
Rhodes. It's all
Rhodes.
About the alternates. It's all about the fill-ins. You want to get named to the team? Good for you. We don't care. We like the guys who show up. You know what I mean? We want that guy's brother to come and put on his uniform and just run around a little bit. Patrick Mahomes, he's busy. But you know who's not busy? Aaron Rodgers' brother. The one he doesn't even talk to. He'll be there.
You know who else is going to be there? Michael Thomas of the New Orleans Saints, who this week put out on Twitter some special Pro Bowl gear.
Yeah?
And you may think, okay, that seems a little bit much. Can't guard Mike. One of my favorite players in the league. Four different t-shirts. All designed around his Pro Bowl appearance. You know what's on that t-shirt? A surfboard and a guy surfing. And you know what's not in Orlando? Any bodies of water.
Nope.
Other than lakes, I guess.
He thought it was in Hawaii.
It's landlocked. But no, it's in Orlando.
I think the Pro Bowl is just, it's the best of the best. I mean, it gets the highest TV ratings ever. It's like every Pro Bowl ever and then that one episode of MASH that everyone can't shut up about. It's that, all right? I can't wait. When I see people who wear NFL jerseys that aren't Pro Bowl jerseys, I'm like, you're not a fan. You must have got that from the Goodwill. Because if you're a real fan of the NFL and your team, you wear the helmet of your team and you wear the jersey of the Pro Bowl. It's either red or it's blue, sometimes white. Pro Bowl, baby.
It's like us in talking about the Pro Bowl in this segment is like the equivalent of the Super Bowl compared to the actual Pro Bowl, which is us talking about the Pro Bowl with the music.
It's like the Super Bowl of Pro Bowl.
We need that goddamn music.
I just get so psyched for the Pro Bowl. Like, last weekend I told you I didn't sleep. This weekend I'm double not sleeping, all right? I'm gonna run straight through my television, pretend I'm in the Pro Bowl. My neighbors are going to sue me. Okay? I can't wait. I can't believe we don't get a podcast next week to talk about what happens at the Pro Bowl, because you better believe I'm going to want to talk about it. If you see me on the street anytime after Sunday, next Sunday, you ask me about the Pro Bowl and I'll tell you all about it. I love it. I love it so much. It's the best. Pro Bowl. That's our annual Pro Bowl talk.
Do you want another song?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Let's hear another song. I thought we were going to the next.
Yeah, let's go to the next headline.
Please. I am excited for these headlines this week. You know,
it's kind of a letdown after that last one.
It,
but okay.
It is. But yes, I wanted the song Erica to the next one, but it wasn't clear. It wasn't clear at all. You know what else isn't clear?
Hmm.
Why the escalators in Mexico City aren't working. But the metro officials in Mexico have come up with a bunch of explanations, including one that really might explain everything. It's the amount of urine that has penetrated and corroded the wheels and mechanisms of the escalators. They list corrosion due to urine as one of the top five causes of their escalator breakdowns, and they're trying to get people to stop peeing on the escalators.
See, this is disgusting to me. It's disgusting to me that we as a society, and I'm saying all human beings, this isn't a Mexican problem, this is an American problem, this is a worldwide problem. What is wrong with people that we can't build an escalator that stands up to human urine? It can handle every other type of urine except for human urine. All right? What's going on? Where are our greatest minds? Where are engineers? We can put a man on the moon, but we can't have an escalator that stands up to human being. If you're an astronaut, you're on the moon, pee in your suit. It's built for that. But you go down an escalator, you whip it out, and you urinate, it's going to break down. I can't believe this is like, this is worse than 9/11.
That's bold. I think it makes sense, though, because when you think about an escalator, one thing comes to mind right away. Maybe two. Like, no, that's going to help me get up or get down to where I want to go. But the number one thing is I want to pee on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's like if you hear, like, if it's raining out, it's like, oh, you think more about peeing. If you're in the shower, you're going to pee. If you're in an escalator, you're going to pee. It's that feeling you get when you're riding up or down and not having to take steps.
Right.
And there's people in front of you and behind you, so no one can see. You can pee.
There's multiple, you know, stages of being potty trained. And the last stage is being able to hold in your pee when you're on an escalator. Walker hasn't gotten there. He's fine the rest of the day. Put him on an escalator, that thing gets wet.
I rewatched Total Recall last night when Arnold Schwarzenegger's running up an escalator and a guy goes to try to shoot him and he takes the guy in front of him and uses him as a human shield for like 20 straight minutes. You know that guy peed. And this is the future. This is the future. That elevator kept going.
Mm.
All right, Schwarzenegger lives. Spoiler alert.
There is another option, which would be to put bathrooms somewhere in the subway system in Mexico City, which doesn't appear like it's happened. There's no urinals or there's no restrooms anywhere within the Mexico City subway system.
So do it before you get on the escalator. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of corners, I assume, in there. You know what I mean? Do it on the subway. Don't do it on the escalator. You know what you're doing. You know? I think it's... Again, I don't blame people for peeing on the escalator. It's almost human nature, you know. I blame the people who don't see this coming, you know. You gotta step it up. You gotta coat them. Coat them with urine. Just for you, you can suck 'em too. Ice cream cone, just like that for about 10 minutes. That was a great song.
Yeah, that's like my favorite little tune I think we've had from our library of songs since 55 miles to Jacksonville. How many miles was it?
59. You know, actually, that reminds me of a note I forgot to hit from Jeremy, who said, just a reminder not to play non-Viacom music on the podcast. Would hate for that to bite us later. I reject it. If Antonio Brown releases a new song, we will talk about it in our weekly Jordy segment. And now it's time for...
ad copy.
Number two. Support for the Jesselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Damn it, Craig. Comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for down there. Listen, We were talking about this before. I wasn't going to say it. We've been given Manscaped. We got Manscaped number 2. Greg didn't want it. We just had one.
2.0.
I took it home. With 2.0. I took it home and I've been using it. And it's not a daily thing. You just need, it's like every like month or two. You want to, you know, I was telling Eric about it. You know, Greg's married. She likes to keep it trimmed, but me and Erica, we're trimmers. We're one night stand people, and you want to make a good first impression when you're never going to see that person again. And that's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag you. And manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. I remember back in the day when people would lose all kinds of stuff down there from manscaping accidents. No more, not with Manscaped. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your nether regions. That's just nasty. Manscaped also has a crop preserver. You're not going to find that anywhere else. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code VANITY at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your junk will thank you.
And we've got a Lawnmower 3.0 now here in the studio, breaking mm-hmm. out that 3.0. Get 20% off, free shipping, and you can use the code VANITY at manscaped.com. At checkout, again, that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code VANITY at checkout.
I can't wait to take home this 3.0 and wait a month and then use it. And it's also sponsored by the Testicular Cancer Society. Didn't see that coming. Mm. They've got a great logo. Manscaped. Vanity. Manscaped.com. And that was
ad copy. Just for you, you can suck a little too. I'm just going to keep
Oh my God, it's a hilarious song. I feel like the Pro Bowl got us so psyched we're bringing that energy to all these stories, whether they deserve it or not.
This story does. A man who was fired.
It's so sad that you're bringing that energy to this.
No, it totally deserves it. A Texas police officer who was fired for giving a sandwich full of feces to a homeless man got his job back after he appealed.
See, it's a misleading headline. It says he fed a sandwich full of feces to
a
homeless man.
He said giving a sandwich full of feces. He admitted to taking some feces.
Dog feces he found along his route. He's a bike cop. He's not a real cop. He's one of those cops who rides a bike.
Putting it.
No one respects.
Putting it between two pieces
of bread. It's like there's real cops. There's like, it's the FBI, then like detectives, then uniformed police, then the chips guys. The guys who ride the motorcycles on the highway, and then it's bike cops.
Then it's the guys that were offended that Odell Beckham slapped him on the butt in the locker room.
Those are just security guards.
They had a little cop thing on them.
A badge? Is that a cop thing?
Yeah, I think they were officially cops. This guy, though, I didn't know he was a bike cop, but that makes sense. He was trying to get some homeless men in general out of his area, and this was the plan that he came up with.
He asked him to leave. This one guy wouldn't, so he found some bread on the ground. He found some dog food. He put it together and wrapped it up and then put it next to him in a bag.
Put it in a container and hoped that would make the guy eat it. But
homeless people are smart. They're not going to eat just any old thing that you leave for them. The guy opened it up, smelled it, and threw it away.
Right.
And then the guy arrested him. And what was his, when he got his job back? And it's always hilarious to me that cops defend other cops no matter what. Like, imagine if a teacher slept with a student and then all the other teachers were like, you can't fire him. You can't fire that person. You know what I mean? You can't do it. No, teachers stand up for each other.
I don't care if you're a cop or not. This is like, you should be not allowed to do anything for the rest of your life if this is the judgment you're using. His excuse, he didn't really have one. He just said he was playing a joke.
Yes.
Like, I learned that I should no longer be playing jokes.
Yes.
This just taught me to stop acting childish
mm-hmm.
and making stupid, baseless jokes. I need to stop with the pranks and juvenile jokes.
I love it.
To get a rise.
I love calling that a prank. I pranked a homeless guy with a sandwich full of dog shit. That is, you're protect and serve, bike cop. All right? It's not just all about like pedaling and getting your Fitbit where you want it to be. You protect and serve.
So I read this article, and it's fascinating because, I mean, I think it points out some of the dumb things of our litigious society. He only got out of the firing. The appeal only worked, and he only got the suspension taken away because he was able to prove, due to some records, that it actually had happened more than 6 months before, whereas they thought it was in 3 months, and that was out of their by their like rules in the police office. It was too old.
He was too hurt to ride his bike for a while, so he got some time off, and then when he came back, when they tried to bust him for it, and he was like, no, it's been too long.
No, it's been 7 months, not 3 months, so you can't fire me.
So Greg, I forget this detail. He got back, he got his job back, and then he's had to serve a suspension for something else. What was it again?
Wait, that was my favorite part, is you get to the end of the article, and it says, despite being indefinitely suspended, despite winning the appeal, it's reported that he has a second indefinite suspension that is still awaiting appeal from June of 2016.
For what?
Reports claim he and another male officer are accused of intentionally defecating in the woman's bike patrol restroom and smearing brown contents over their toilet seat and leaving defecation in the stall.
And that's another little prank he was playing on the women's.
That was his prank on the women's bike patrol. I think he's got a problem. I think he's got a poop problem.
Yeah.
I think he's obsessed with poop, with creating havoc with feces. It's not a man you want patrolling the streets.
Would you guess he's single or married?
Wait, what?
Would you guess this guy is single or married?
I would guess he was single. Yeah.
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 I bet he's got three kids.
Just like
I bet he's divorced with three kids.
He's like smearing poop all over his house.
No, I think he keeps his house clean. But I guarantee he's got children. It just seems like America. Just for you, you can suck a little too. Ice cream cone. Just like that, about 10 minutes. And now it's time for
Ad Copy.
My dear friend, opener, and good talk writer, Megan Gailey, has a new sports podcast called The Greatest. Every week, she and her husband, CJ Toledano, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, I was just at their wedding, so I should be, are joined by a guest to discuss, debate, and rank everything and anything within the sports canon. Mm. They were lucky enough to have me as their very first guest. The podcast debuted today, and we talked about the greatest beefs of all time. Greatest sports beefs. I picked Doc Ellis versus the entire Cincinnati Reds organization and Isaiah Thomas versus Magic Johnson, two of my favorite beefs. Listen and subscribe to The Greatest. It's literally called The Greatest. At the end of the podcast, they turned to me and said, Anthony, you are the greatest. And then it ended and I had no idea what the fuck was going on. But you can find it on iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. The Greatest with Megan Gailey and her husband, CJ Toledano. Check it out. And that was
Ad Copy.
All right, our final headline is from Kansas, where a man has asked a judge to engage in a sword fight with his ex-wife in order to settle their disputes over custody, visitation, and everything else.
Have you seen a picture of this guy?
I haven't. I should have.
I saw Samurai Sword, and I just wanted to talk about it, because if you guys are longtime listeners, you know that Greg's wife is Japanese, or at least pretends to be. You know, if she's not Japanese, she has committed to the bit. Both her parents live in Japan, don't speak a lick of English, and she looks Japanese. But I'm still skeptical. You know, I didn't see her be born. She speaks English perfectly, without an accent at all.
Grew up in Irvine.
But I would imagine that if you guys got divorced, she would pull this shit. She would be like, samurai sword fight to the death, and you'd be screwed.
I would be screwed.
Yeah.
Well, in this,
you think if you and your wife fought with samurai swords, you think you'd have a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more athletic, right?
No,
I'm quicker.
Mm-mm.
She's meaner.
Yeah.
What am I getting myself into? You're getting me into all of this.
I bet she could throw the sword. I bet you'd be like holding it and trying to figure out like how to swing it, and she would just chuck it right through your face.
Well,
I bet she dreams about it every night and never tells you.
She also could have someone step in. My favorite, I mean, there's a lot of fun details here.
Trial by combat?
In the trial by combat idea that this guy had. First of all, he pointed out that it's been proven in some recent cases that they actually never took these trial by combat laws off the books, that no one has made a law that this is illegal.
Is this a Kansas thing or like a federal thing?
He pointed out it's been used as recently as 1818, which seems like a while ago. Like, world definitely changed since then. But there was a recent one 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, in New York that pointed out it's never actually been outlawed.
Didn't he want to fight the judge, too? He wanted to fight the judge and his ex-wife?
But what he also said was that, and this is where I get back to what Emeka could do. He said if his wife wanted, he's happy to take on her lawyer or anyone else that she wanted to step in for her, which seems like a pretty bad strategic move. All she would have to do is hire someone that was good with samurai swords, and he's dead.
She could hire your wife. She could hire Emeka. And then this guy's screwed. As screwed as Greg's going to be when he finally tries to leave her.
Because he admits that he's never used a samurai sword before. He just thought it'd be cool, and he also asked the judge for 12 weeks so he could get the samurai swords.
Not to train, but like to get two swords.
Well, yeah, you have to, I don't know.
Like the shipping, it's like 8 to 12 weeks, and he was like, I don't want to show up here and embarrass myself. What did the judge say?
I don't think it's... You know, at the time of the writing, it hasn't
like, was
been
this
decided.
Guy just goofing off and, like, screwing around, or was he legit trying to get this going?
It seems like he didn't really expect it to happen, but it was sort of a move that he thought his ex-wife was using such ridiculous moves to, like, take away his visitation from his children and trying to take all his money that this was just as ridiculous. So it seemed like he was trying to send a message. The opposing lawyer responded by saying that he should be, you know, checked for, like, mental illness.
Is he representing himself, or does he have a lawyer? Because if he has a lawyer, I'd love to hear what that lawyer has to say about this. This would be...
I think he's representing himself. I mean, it's not... People did it for a while, you know? I mean, in this case, it doesn't seem like a good idea, but if it was just, like, two guys trying to settle some dispute over money...
Sure, they'd have duels back in the day.
They wanted to settle it just like amongst themselves. I mean, in this case, there's children involved. The wife obviously
wouldn't
want to.
Make the kids fight each other.
Yeah.
Make the kids. If you've got three kids, you know what I mean? Get it down to one and then problem solved.
But like of all
they can get back together and enjoy their lives.
But like duels back in the day, that almost was like efficient. If you were dumb enough to get in the duel, it's like that's cutting out 50% of the dueling population, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, but it was never a man versus a woman duel. You know what I mean? It would only be man on man or woman on woman. I'm sure there were some female on female duels. Not a lot. But who was it? Aaron Burr killed a president or killed a treasurer or something? That happened.
Just a couple of history experts.
Yeah.
You have swords. I mean, you're one of the rare people that would be prepared.
I've got a hatchet, someone had axe, to and a knife.
Duel to the death with swords.
Yeah, I know exactly which axe I would use.
Do you know how to use them at all?
I use an axe? Yeah, I'll hold it up over your head and bring it down. Take it to the side, bring it around.
If I was in a duel with you, I think I would have a good shot.
Why do you think that?
Because I have more stamina. Like, I could just run around a lot. I'd be like the Floyd Mayweather of, like...
You think I would chase you? You think I'd fall for that? You think I'd start running?
I would just, like, be moving. I'd be ducking and weaving. I'd be bobbing and moving.
What would your weapon be? If I challenged you to a duel, what would you choose as the weapon? Because as the challenged, you get to choose what the weapon is.
Shotgun.
A shotgun? And you think you could duck out of the way? You'd tire me out?
No. Well, I guess if my plan was to duck... then, yeah, it would be more of a smaller knife.
What if
more
it was unloaded, like, shotguns and we had to beat each other to death with them? You know, hold it by the barrel and swing the handle part at someone.
I just think people that are, you know, bigger and stronger like yourself underestimate the will that I would bring to this fight.
I think
the will, the want to, and the endurance.
I think your only chance would be to cry me to death. You'd just be weeping.
Just like put on Little Women.
Yes. And now it's time for
Choo Choo
Recommendation Station.
Speaking of Little Women,
I'm recommending it again.
No, I'm just kidding. I'll go first. I'm going to recommend Rachel Cusk's book Outline. Here's another trilogy for you, of which I've read the first two books.
None of the books we've talked about are trilogies
or series of books. Mm-hmm. I should have said. The first book though is called Outline, and I've read the second, and they've become pretty popular, I think, which is surprising because, you know, they're not the easiest book to, like, sink your teeth in terms of plot, but there is something very just cool about it. It's this totally detached writer, observer, you would call it, kind of like auto fiction. You know, she's definitely you know, kind of the space between her, the actual writer, and the narrator of the story. Uh-oh, Anthony's rubbing his eyes. What I lost you already?
I don't know why you can't clean this up and get people to read what you're recommending. You didn't say anything about the book. Make it quick and name the author and the title and hope that people pick it up because they trust us now. We are book readers. We are lovers of literature.
Here's the thing. I want you to read it. I want some of our readers to read it.
Or I read most of the stuff you recommend.
Or mostly I want to hear from the readers that have read it because I want to talk about it with someone. Because I wouldn't say it was like the most pleasurable reading experience I've ever had. I know you're thinking, but it's fascinating. And I had to finish it right away. And I've thought about it so much since that's why I'm recommending it. Like, she has these little lines in it that stick with you. At one point she notices sort of like how often people betray themselves by what they notice in others. And like the second she, like I read that, like that hit me like a lightning bolt. And I think about it all the time. You're looking at your phone now.
I'm emailing myself through this book.
Please.
What's it called again?
Rachel Cusk. The first one is called Outline. And again,
Outline singular?
Outline. And it's mostly, in this one, she's on vacation, and it's mostly conversations that she has with other people and kind of other people revealing themselves. And it's just totally unlike anything.
And there's three of them? You got to read them all?
No. I read one. I took about a year off and read another one. I will read the third. Like, if you like it, it did really stick with me. It's like just so intelligent and cool, and it's got an unbelievable cover. I like think that's important.
Jesus Christ.
Like the cover fits what the book is. It's like just this icy cool. I think you will like it. I'm curious to see what you think. I did not explain it well.
Nope, never do.
Fuck,
Erica. What do you got for us?
Since it came out like 4 days ago, I've been listening to Circles by Mac Miller on repeat. It's his sixth album that came out that he was almost finished with before his death. And it's really eerie. It's really like smooth. He sings a lot on it, and you could see sort of where they piecemeal it together. And it's really a lot of it. He's just like, you never know when you're gonna like fall so hard, and I'm not myself. Like it's really sort of chilling to listen to it, and I'm super into it right now.
Great. I hear good things, and I don't know if I'll be able to listen to it, to be honest. I love Mac Miller. I've heard critics have really
tough. Loved
it and said it's like you see where he was going to go and evolve as an artist, and it's too bad we lost him.
I really like it. I think Swimming, his previous one, was a lot harder to listen to in terms of like was a little sad,
yeah.
Whereas this one, they're good songs. I mean, and he barely raps on it. He might rap on two songs.
See, I love them rapping.
Yeah, and so I missed that a little bit, but a lot of the songs are great.
I will check it out. My recommendation is an older book. I think it was published in the 80s, or mid-80s. It's Haruki Murakami. This is the first book I've ever read of his. People love him. He's a cult author, been around a long time, and he says this is his favorite book that he's ever written. It's called Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World. I was at a party like a year ago, and someone was telling me about how much they love Haruki Murakami, and I said, I've never actually gotten into his stuff. They said, start with Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World. It's a great book. It's kind of a detective novel, kind of a pulp noir, but it's about a guy who, I don't want to spoil anything. If you like kind of, I always like noir and that sort of, guy getting the shit beat out of him throughout the story and still kind of coming out on top. And not necessarily that's what happens, but it's kind of two stories that go back and forth chapter by chapter, and the writing is beautiful. It's in the future. What else do I have to say? Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World by Haruki Murakami. And that's how you recommend a book. Now, Ellis, get us the F.O.
Well, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball.
Pro Bowl.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.